This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Do you find yourself grabbing a soft drink when you fill up the car with petrol? Do you sometimes reach for the Bickies just a few hours after breakfast? And do you find yourself craving something sweet after dinner? If you have you ever considered that you could actually be addicted to sugar? David Gillespie is the author of The Sweet Poison Quit Plan, How to Kick the Sugar Habit and Lose Weight. Good morning, David, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Katrina.
So what's wrong with sugar?
What's right with sugar? There is no good reason to include sugar as part of your diet. I mean, it's an anti-food more than a food. It is directly converted to fat rather than energy, and it absorbs nutrients and interferes with your body's ability to use nutrients provided by other food. So there isn't any good reason to have sugar as part of your diet.
Okay, but is it actually bad for you? Does it cause disease? Does it make you get fat? What does it do?
Indeed it does. The one that would concern most people is that it makes you get fat, but that's really a symptom of the damage that it's doing. Sugar is half glucose and half fructose. So what we would think of as table sugar is those two molecules joined together, glucose and fructose. Now, glucose half of sugar is vitally necessary for us to continue living. It is our fuel. The glucose part runs our bodies, and every food that we eat is converted to glucose. But the fructose half has no purpose whatsoever. Mm. It is converted immediately to fat by our livers. It never is used for energy and has no opportunity to provide us with any real benefits. So that fat, though, starts circulating in our arteries. And besides making us fat, it also does some other things. It interferes with our ability to tell when we are full, in that circulating fat interferes with the operation of hormones which would otherwise tell us to stop eating. So this thing not only makes us fat directly, it also makes us fat indirectly by giving our bodies permission to eat a lot more of everything else than we otherwise would eat. Add to that the fact that it's addictive, and you've got a fairly dangerous substance to have in our diet.
So is it actually addictive, and how is it so?
Okay, so the exact mechanism of addiction is not certain. What we know for absolute certain is that it is addictive in animal studies, in the sense that you can produce addictive responses similar to cocaine and heroin using sugar in animals. There aren't any studies in humans that produce those results, because doing that kind of experiment on humans is probably a bit dubious at best. There are psychological studies on humans which suggest that the addiction process is there in full in humans and replicating what is happening in animals. And, I mean, you would know yourself. If I say to you, you've got to give up sugar for the rest of your life, the reaction you would have to that is
scary.
The same reaction that just about everybody would have to that, which is, what do you mean I can't ever eat anything sweet-tasting ever again in my life? Mm. Whereas if I said to you, listen, you know, for the sake of your health, you've got to give up eating vegetables for the rest of your life.
Not many people
would say, if I picked out a particular vegetable, if I said broccoli, you can't eat that for the rest of your life. Most people would say, well, I can get around that.
Okay.
And it wouldn't be, you wouldn't fill you with fear and trepidation. With sugar, the reaction is very, very similar to when you say to a smoker, you've got to give up smoking for the rest of your life. Most of them say, yeah, I could do that, I just don't need to do it now. And you get the same reaction with sugar as well.
Okay, well, I'm interested in your own personal journey, David. How did you become so interested in this?
Oh, well, I was heavily overweight. I was 40 kilos heavier than I am now, weighing in well north of 120 kilos. And we had four young children. And my wife then said to me, you know that fifth child we're expecting? Well, it's twins.
Oh, hello.
And I was having trouble keeping up with the four young children then, which were all under nine, let alone adding twins to that mix, and being massively overweight and apathetic and having no motivation whatsoever. I had tried dieting, every kind of dieting, all my life. You know, I didn't suddenly become 40 kilograms overweight. It was a kilo here and a kilo there over my lifetime. And so I tried everything going. You know, I'd try it for a few weeks, then I couldn't stand eating asparagus soup or something like that and would have to go back to eating normally again. And it would work for a little while, and then the weight would come back with interest. And I said to myself, this can't possibly be the case that all of a sudden, you know, in the early part of the 21st century, we've suddenly lost all ability to control our weight. There must be some evidence which suggests that you know, there's a mechanism here that we can understand. And so I started looking for it. I'm a lawyer by training, not a nutritionist. And what I was looking for was evidence that backed up what nutritionists were telling me, which is that, oh, well, in order to lose weight, you need to stop eating fat and you need to exercise more. And what I was finding when I started looking for that evidence was that there wasn't any. Or the evidence that was there was dubious at best. What I also found was that there was an awful lot of evidence around the effects that sugar, and in particular one half of sugar, the fructose half, can have on our bodies. And that was what was interesting to me. What was, made it even more interesting is that a lot of the evidence had come to light in the last 10 years or so, as drug companies started investing serious amounts of money in understanding exactly how our appetite control hormones work, because obviously they want to make a drug that affects those hormones and that would help us lose weight. But in so doing, they invested serious research effort into understanding those hormones. And in fact, three of our four major appetite control hormones were only discovered in the last 10 years. So it shows how little we knew about our bodies before the last decade.
Mm.
And the interaction of sugar with those hormones is what's really interesting.
Okay. I'm speaking with David Gillespie. He's the author of The Sweet Poison Quit Plan, How to Kick the Sugar Habit and Lose Weight. David, if people are addicted, then how do they kick the habit?
The same way they kick the habit with any other opioid addiction. Now, nicotine is an opioid addiction, and so is heroin, so is cocaine, and they're all different types of opioid addiction. Now, sugar is a similar type of addiction. It's the sugar itself is not an opioid, but it forces our body to produce its own opioid called cortisol, and that's what we're actually addicted to.
Okay.
And so withdrawing from a sugar addiction is identical to withdrawing from a nicotine addiction.
So would people experience physical symptoms like headaches and tiredness and irritability?
Exactly those symptoms, yes. So exactly the symptoms that someone who is kicking sugar, a smoking habit, the person kicking the sugar habit will have exactly the same symptoms. So they could range all the way from almost nothing. Some people manage to get away with nothing. Other people have tiredness, headaches, depression, mood swings, all of those raft of things.
And so is it just a matter of going cold turkey? Is that the best way of doing it?
It is for some people and it isn't for others. What I've found since the first book came out, and I started talking about this, is that, and it was a case study of one, which was just me, I went cold turkey and it worked brilliantly for me. It took 2 weeks and I was over sugar, I didn't have cravings anymore, and I really didn't find sugar particularly appealing after that. Other people have reported to me, no, that didn't work for me, I couldn't get past. I tried it for a few weeks and the cravings just got the better of me and I had to go back to sugar and then I had to start again. Dominantly, it was women who reported that second experience. So okay. Men seem to be reporting, you know what, no problems, I did what you did. Stopped cold, it was over. Women, on the other hand, said, no, I just could not do it. I would go for a few weeks and I'd be fine, but the cravings would then come back really, really strong and I couldn't do it. So what I devised in this second book, in the Quit Plan book, was a plan that would work better, particularly for women, but for anyone who experienced that, which is that the cravings were just too strong, which is a way of accurately moderating down the amount of sugar that you ate until you reach zero.
So it's like a step process.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. What are some of the worst foods for sugar content? And also, how can you help us with dealing with the packaging of foods to sort of be able to understand what is on the label?
Oh, okay. So in terms of foods, the obvious foods that contain sugar, now no one's going to be too surprised to find out that confectionery and soft drinks have loads of sugar in them.
Mm.
And that's not a surprise and it's easy to avoid. The tricky ones are the ones where people think they're doing the right thing, but are in fact eating just as much sugar as confectionery and soft drink. So examples of that are juices contain just as much, if not more, sugar than soft drink.
Wow.
So a fruit juice is no better for you than a soft drink, and in some cases is actually considerably worse for you in terms of sugar content.
Okay.
Breakfast cereals is another major category of sugar in our day. It's a third of what we eat in a day.
Mm-hmm.
Most Australian breakfast cereals contain anywhere between a quarter and a third sugar,
wow.
Even the really healthy ones. No one's going to be fooled into thinking that the chocolate-covered things that they feed to children are health food, but when you find out that the stuff that they're offering up to adults as health food contains almost as much sugar, then that's a surprise to a lot of people.
That is.
On my website, I have a free guide to every breakfast cereal in Australia and the sugar content of them all, and there's over 150 of them. But most of them are more than a quarter sugar.
Okay.
So that's a big category. Another area which often catches people by surprise are the muesli bars.
Mm-hmm.
There are no good muesli bars, and some of them are significant quantities of sugar in them. Some of them are up to three quarters sugar. So they're vast amounts of sugar in them, and there are very few of them that have less sugar than an equivalent size of confectionery.
What about dairy products, like yogurt and ice cream and things?
Yeah, most dairy products are fine. Obviously, ice cream has sugar in it.
Mm.
The only surprising one to a lot of people is yogurt, really. Mm. Yogurt is intrinsically sour. So if your yogurt doesn't taste sour, then something is making it taste sweet, and it's usually sugar.
Okay.
Right. So that's a surprise in dairy. Now, the tricky thing about dairy is the label. Now, you mentioned before, how can we tell when we're looking at the label of something in a supermarket? Mostly, the sugars are identified on the label. And so it will say, under the carbohydrates heading, it'll say sugars, and it'll give you a number of grams per 100. And that usually just translates to straight sugar, what you would think of as table sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So you can simply take that number, and you'll know how much sugar you're getting. Anything more than about 5 grams per 100 in anything is too much sugar. Dairy is the exception to that. Dairy is 5 grams per 100 of sugar, but it's all lactose. So unflavoured milk is 5 grams per 100 of sugar, but lactose is a combination of two molecules which don't include the dangerous molecule I'm talking about, which is fructose.
Mm-hmm.
So dairy, you've always got to take that 5 grams per 100 off any number that you see in order to see how much added sugar there is. And that's really the only tricky one. Every other thing in the supermarket, just look at the label under sugars and you'll see how much sugar is in the thing, and you will be surprised. The most surprising to most people is that most low-fat foods have higher sugar content than the high-fat equivalent. You look at something like mayonnaise, for example, it's about 25% sugar in the low-fat variety, whereas the full-fat whole egg mayonnaise is less than 1%.
Oh, wow. I want to say, once you have broken the habit, then can you get away with the occasional sort of soft drink at a barbecue or a cake at a birthday? Or are you just totally no sugar at all?
I'm totally no sugar, but that's only because I have a very great fear of going through withdrawal again. I guess I'm like a smoker that's given up and really doesn't want to go through that again.
Okay.
But some people find that they have a tolerable level where they can sneak, you know, one thing, and it doesn't push them back into having cravings again. The trouble is that it's kind of like walking in a minefield. You don't know until you step on the mine that you've stepped on the mine. So you don't know that you've crossed that level where you're going to have cravings again until you do it. I've found from my own personal experience, on the one occasion when I did have to go through withdrawal again, the one nice big slice of chocolate mud cake did it for me.
Okay.
So I take it as a general rule to just stay away from sugar. And because I don't have cravings for sugar anymore, it doesn't have any particular attraction to me anyway, and I'm not depriving myself of anything.
Okay. I'm talking to David Gillespie, the author of The Sweet Poison Quit Plan, How to Kick the Sugar Habit and Lose Weight. I have one more, I guess, topic I want to ask you about, David, and that is to do with kids.
Yep.
How can parents keep their kids off sugar?
Well, one of the easiest ways to do it is to give them a sugar-free environment. You have no chance of keeping kids off sugar if your house is full of it. If you've got a cupboard full of muesli bars or fruit bars, or you've got a fridge full of fruit juice, or you've got all those cereals on the shelves, your kids will be getting a lot of sugar. If you remove the sugar from the environment, then kids will eat whatever's on offer. Outside, when the kids are going to someone else's party, we just give them some guidance. You are never going to stop a child drinking a soft drink at somebody else's party without making them a weirdo or yourself being a weirdo.
Mm. Exactly.
So you just have to give them some rules and say, look, I'd prefer if you just restricted yourself to one big glass of soft drink and then switch to water a diet drink after that.
Okay. Well, that sounds like sensible advice. Not too hard to deal with in daily life.
Yeah, no, and our kids, as I said, we have 6 kids, and they seem to be able to cope with it. They have sweets at other people's houses and birthday parties and so on, but they have a lot less sugar in their lives than most kids do now.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for talking to us this morning, David. It's been a very fascinating journey to learn so much about sugar and how it affects us.
Pleasure.
Yeah, that's David Gillespie. He's the author of The Sweet Poison Quit Plan, How to Kick the Sugar Habit and Lose Weight. I hope it works for you.
This has been a Hope 103.2 podcast. For helpful articles, station news, videos, devotional emails and more podcasts, visit hope1032.com.au.